Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the weekly wind down. We are excited to be joined by Blessing Shahid tonight, and we are going to talk a little bit more about what she's here to discuss with us after you get our so very important what we're drinking. I'm sure Aaron's not drinking wine. Are you drinking wine?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Of course not. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacy, the political princess.
I'm Jean, the feisty feminist.
I'm Erin, the geeky gal pal.
And Blessing, you want to say hi?
Hi, I'm Blessing, the queen.
There you go.
Yes, queen.
So I super cheated tonight. I'm just drinking Black Box Pinot Noir. I was in like a real funk all day, arguing with people on Facebook and stuff. I was like, whatever. So I went down the wine aisle when I went to the store today, and I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm just going with what I know. So sorry.
The old standby.
Hey, you drink the same vodka week after week after week.
That's what I'm saying, though, Jackie. I can feel you.
Is it watermelon, Erin?
Not. Just wait till you get to me.
Yeah. I can't wait.
I am drinking water because I have an engagement with a bunch of high schoolers on Zoom after this, so I'm
all
not
the more reason.
Lame. I was just gonna say, why would you not drink?
I need to have my wits about me.
Well, I guess I will be the fancy one tonight because I am drinking Le Bosso Vin de France 2018. And it is a Sauvignon Blanc that I got when I entered the wonderful world of ordering wine online. And I'm liking it.
I love that this is like the biggest thing to happen in Gene all year is discovering wine ordering. Like, it's just...
The entire year of 2020 has been nothing but hot dog water, with the one exception of me discovering getting a box of wine delivered to my front door. That has been the one bright
spot.
Must
be how cavemen felt when they discovered fire, I'm sure.
I think that that's a perfect analogy.
Oh, shit, that's funny. So I am drinking, I'm taking a little detour from Tito's Boulevard, and I am drinking a Smirnoff Seltzer, limited edition, red, white, and berry.
I feel that like is one of my favorite vodkas.
I was gonna say, I heard this Jean. Good.
Yeah, Jean said something about it, I think last year in Pittsburgh, she was like, get me red, white, and berry at the liquor store. Well, let me tell you something about the Pittsburgh liquor store I went to. That was not available.
It was just a little too fancy for Pittsburgh,
yeah,
I think.
Like, there was some vodka, some hard alcohol, maybe five bottles of wine, and a corkscrew that literally was like the one where you had to put the thing through it. It was like, I was like, well, I guess this is going to have to work. So, yeah, but so far, this has treated me very, very well.
We'll see by the end.
It is basically, it's basically a, like a Truly or a White Claw or whatever, but it has only one carb, not two. So,
are you mixing it with vodka, though?
I am not.
Oh,
I am not.
Oh my gosh.
I wanted to be like a classy person tonight. I didn't want Blessing to be like, who's this white chick?
Drunk.
I wanted to be nice and classy and, like, you know, be able to actually hold a conversation instead of being like, man, drunk.
That's going to be something different for our listeners, for sure.
I know. Like, who's this imposter?
Does this mean you're not going to talk about the world healing itself tonight, how the earth is healing itself?
From COVID?
I know. Remember talking about that the last time.
You did it, like, 3 weeks in a row.
You
I don't think
what?
This
I'm
is the week
it.
For
let's
it.
Make it a, let's make it a solid month.
Okay, do you guys, want to know what I'm drinking?
Oh, you're drinking
yes.
Okay, what I'm drinking is vintage salsa water, raspberry and lime. You could use it for Passover. It's kosher.
Oh, nice.
It's no liquor. I don't drink. Zero calories, zero sodium, and that's like my favorite drink. An ice cold one of these, and I'm good.
Wow.
I don't think I've had that one. I drink the like sparkling ice ones.
Okay.
I like those ones too. Pomegranate and blueberry is what I had earlier. But what did you, you said vintage?
So it's a vintage brand. It doesn't have sugar in it. And it's like, it gives you like a kick, kind of like a Pepsi or a ginger ale. And it's my favorite. My husband hates it. My son, I trained him to like it. So we're good.
It sounds really good. I feel like I would really like that.
With vodka. I was.
I need to get myself on a zero calorie beverage kick.
Right.
You're eventually going to have to go back out in the world.
I don't want to, though.
No.
So we asked Blessing to join us this evening. And one of the reasons being with all of the unrest and injustice in the world taking place right now, we thought it was more important to speak to a person of color about it than for us, once again, to sit around and kick around our thoughts and feelings on it. We've never kept those a secret, but Blessing is in a unique position. We met in Gettysburg. She's an amazing, amazing human being. Want to bring one of our friends from one of our coastal elite cities in, because Blessing has the unique experience of living in a rural part of Pennsylvania where the Battle of Gettysburg took place. So for half of the year, not only does she have to deal with everything she already has to deal with, she gets to have Confederate flags waved in her face constantly. Not her specifically, but in general in that town. Right. So she has a more unique experience than some of the people that we're acquainted with where we live. So I really, really appreciate her joining us. We met, she came to the rec park and where I used to work in Gettysburg and just saw a need for something for kids to do after school. And for those that don't know anything about the rec park, I worked in, there was only like four of us that worked there. So there wasn't a lot of people to go around. And she just walked in and said, I have a plan, I have a program, and this is what I want to do. And I'll do it for free. So my experience with her was just as soon as you meet her, you can just kind of feel the energy coming out of her. And I think that's going to come through tonight because she's pretty incredible. Blessing, I think I want to start with, do you want to tell our listeners, I told you before, we do have people that listen to us in about 30 different countries currently, although we still can't get the damn Dakotas. What's going on, Dakotas? Why won't you listen to us? But people who aren't familiar with necessarily how the United States is set up and kind of what the actual political environment is here, do you want to tell them where you grew up and how you came to be where you are now?
Well, I am originally from West Philadelphia. A lot of people know that Will Smith was from West Philadelphia, born and raised. And I grew up, my mother was a Black civil rights, she was a part of the Black Panther Party, and she moved from that Black Panther Party into becoming a part of, Black Panther Party made Black people aware of their body being their temple and looking for something deeper than Christianity, which eventually led my mom to become a Muslim and to just be a part of community engagement. And so that's how I grew up. I grew up fighting to shut down stop and goes, liquor stores that would open on the corners of schools at 8 a.m. when we have to walk to school and there's winos smelling like liquor early in the morning. We were shutting those down at 8 and 9 years old. So I belong to a community that is often shown in a very, very negative light almost all of the time. But I am living proof that there is good in the hood. And there are people who are living in what people call, you know, oh, they're a product of their environment. There are people who are fighting to change the outcome of that statement. And I am a product of that. And I'm raising a child to be a product of that. And me coming to Gettysburg was because of that. I was looking for something more, being a single parent at the time, looking for a good education and looking for a safe neighborhood. And I found that here in Gettysburg, but I traded in the sound of gunshots and unsafe playgrounds with, you know, people, well, people smoke weed at these playgrounds too, but, you know, other drugs being at the playground too, like she said, Confederate flags and the evil looks of me being covered. And where being a Black Muslim in Philadelphia is something that makes you well known and not something for people to look at you, you know, weirdly about. But yeah, that's what brought me here to Gettysburg. And I think I brought a piece of that, just trying to help my son to fit in, being about a part of the 2 percentile at his school of African Americans. And most of the 2% is biracial. My son is Black mixed with Black. And it was very difficult for him starting at kindergarten to have to learn about how he's different by hearing children say that his skin is the color of poop, you know? Oh. And having to address things like that, and to when you approach a parent about a kindergartner saying something like that, the fight is often just to get them to hear you, because they can't believe that their child says something like that, and they swear that it's not because of them. Nobody ever said it was, you know, little things like that. But back to you, Jackie.
Her little boy is so cute. I can't imagine anyone talking to him like that.
Right. It's just a reality. And, you know, I only say that to give you a quick overview of some of the things that, before we even get to the fact of death and we, the part of how difficult it is to live, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Yeah.
So everyone is familiar with what happened to George Floyd, and how horrific it is. I would like to say that it is an isolated incident. Of course it's not. It's been happening more and more frequently, it seems. And I don't know if it's more pronounced because of this president, or people are feeling more emboldened because of it, or they just don't feel like they have to hide their racism anymore, or what it is. But one of kind of the most frustrating parts of it is, you know, I know we've had conversations on here about why Kaepernick took a knee and why that whole movement became a thing, and why the brutality against more specifically Black men, because they are at greater risk, it seems, especially by the police department. Why it was so important. And then, you know, the protests go on, and the Black Lives Matter movement started, and they were peacefully protesting, and it seemed to go on and on, but the killing seemed to keep happening. And now there's a large group of people who are acting terribly surprised that now there's rioting. And, you know, I had to remind even several of people in the LGBTQ community today that the gay rights movement started with a riot at Stonewall. So
I was just gonna say, that's how revolutions start. Revolutions start with riots.
Right.
America started with a riot. It was called the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah. Right. So I think that, if you don't mind, I wanted to discuss about the Kaepernick taking a knee, because this is something that It starts a discussion, and I think that a lot of people need clarity in understanding what taking a knee is. So as growing up as an African-American, daughter of a Black Panther, daughter of a Muslim mother and father, I have never stood for the Pledge of Allegiance. So, I mean, can you guys say the Pledge of Allegiance for me? Because I need you to understand that what it's saying to me. This allegiance that is so powerful that you think I should be quiet for, stand for, and put my hand over my heart. You're telling, if you could say it for me, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's all lies. Why would I stand to put my, for me, it might not be a lie for you, but it is a lie for me. So why would I put my hand here? And when you sing, oh, say, can you see? No, we can't see. You know, we can't, because your knee is on my neck, I can't sit. You know what I'm saying? All the things that these words mean to you mean absolutely nothing to me. And so my son, again, is 8 years old, and he joined the football team here in Gettysburg. Again, he is a part of a my very minority group, very, very small group of African-American children. And I did not know that my son was going to take a knee on his first game. And he did that. And it's like, we're in a town that was an hour away from, I don't know, I really don't know. And when I say that term, I mean, is that a bad term? Is redneck a bad term?
Redneck?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Well, I think to the redneck maybe, but not to us.
Yeah. Like a tracker, a trucker that's spitting out tobacco, and he's like talking, mumbling. Well, this town of Gettysburg, we already rode an hour into another direction, and we don't know. I don't really know what to expect when I see a bunch of people who don't look like me. And my son takes a knee, and I thought that the Pledge of Allegiance, I thought that the Star Spangled Banner had, they stopped it, but it was like, it was a CD and it skipped. And I'm like, oh my God, are they about to try to tell my son he can't play in this game because he took a knee? But it wasn't, the CD skipped. And afterwards, there was a discussion about it, and people were asking me to ask my son not to do that. And I'm like, no, I'm never going to ask him not to do that. But I needed to, when I got home, ask my son, well, why did you do that? He said, Mom, I'm doing it because you told me that that was a lie, and I don't want to stand up for a lie, and I don't believe in it. And I said, okay. I said, so do you understand that you want to do this every time? Is this something you just felt like doing today? He said, Mom, I'm never standing for it. And so if an eight-year-old can learn that early, because I didn't discuss that in particular with him, and I don't watch sports. So he saw that on sports. But I have raised him since the age of 4 to be aware of his blackness, to be aware of how he is perceived, to be aware of his history. So if he could come to draw that own conclusion, and I don't understand why it is so hard for people to understand why people do not want to stand for the pledge and would like to take a knee. I don't understand that. And I, a part of us having allies is for you guys to help people to understand why it's important to have freedom of speech. It's just as important to have freedom of non-speech. You do not have to repeat after you about something that's not true to you. So.
Gene, you can go. I'll go after you.
Well, I just wanted to make two quick points. Blessing, I agree with you to the point that it is a lie, because as a lesbian who I'm 50 years old and just, you know, just in the last few years, I started to see my marginalized minority start to get some rights under President Obama. Right. And then when President Trump waltzes into office, all of the haters, you know, just started rising up, and systematically all the southern states started to look for all these kinds of loopholes where they could start turning back all of the rights that were given to the LGBT community under President Obama.
Right.
And it is when it says and liberty and justice for all, that is a lie.
It's a lie.
It is. Yeah, I totally really agree with you. And you know, I'm so impressed that your son was able to, at 8 years old, kind of take this really intelligent stand and actually be able to tell you why he did it. He didn't do it just because he saw his favorite NFL players doing it.
Right.
He did it because he understood the principle behind it, and he was able to tell you that.
Right. Yeah. Right. And yeah. It was as a parent, it was a very scary thing from where we were, but I couldn't sleep that entire night understanding the kind of young man that I'm raising. And he's a reflection of everything that I put into him. He's a reflection of everything my parents put into me, and that could be a dangerous thing.
I just want to say too, like, thing. I, right?
I think it's really impressive too. I mean, that may have been like the wrong way to say that, but I love that you've taught him that not everything you hear in school is necessarily what you should do. Right. You know, I mean, as a young kid, I cannot even tell you how many times, like, there were moments when I was like, I don't necessarily believe in this. I don't believe in this. I don't believe in this. But I still got up every single time and said the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. I still put my hand on my heart for the Star Spangled Banner. Like, I still sing along with, you know, America, my country, tis of thee, right. You know, blah, 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 blah. Like, you learn these things at such a young age, and, like, whether your parents are there to tell you if it's good or bad is, and I'm not saying my mom or my dad was not there to tell me that. It was sort of like, I was just taught that you do what you're told.
Right. You know? Aaron? Like,
yeah.
It goes way deeper than that, though.
Yeah.
Do you know how many things that we were taught that were not real, that were not true? Do you know how many things that are in history books that we kind of like traditionally just follow that are what's keeping us divided as a nation, as a people, as a community?
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. And right. It's not that our parents were bad parents because they didn't teach us that. It's just that your parents' story was not my parents' story. And we had to, this is not new. And like it was said earlier that it's happening at an increase in numbers. When I was a little girl, I could remember in the middle of the night hearing the cops bang on a neighbor's door. And the next day seeing the father being beat black and blue, looking like he was beat black and blue. But it was no way to prove that the police had done that. Or maybe someone had a run-in like that and then didn't come home. They're missing. And there was no way to prove it. Mm-hmm. And so at that age, it was a very scary thing. It's even scarier at 38 to watch that we see it on live TV and the black man is still wrong. We see it on live TV and it's still not murder. What is the difference from strange fruit of black lives hanging from trees than to watch it on social media with, I don't care what color the person is behind the gun. I'm talking about, we are watching people losing their lives at record numbers, and it's not a new thing. But I will say that since 45 has been in office, people feel as though they are entitled to show their white supremacy.
Yes.
To make you feel as if you don't have a voice and you don't have a right to be in a country that we never, ever intended to come to. You stole us. You broke us. You raped us. You beat us. You are still living. You are still have generations of people who are benefiting off the backs of our ancestors while we struggle to feed our children, while we struggle to educate our children. And then people within the culture and outside of the culture blame us. They don't blame the system that have taught us lies about ourselves before we even recognize who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So true. It's so like, I hate to sound so small and petty, but like, I'm literally getting chills listening to you because this is exactly like every thought I've had is like coming out of, and it's so like, it's just resonating so much. And it's really great to have you tonight. Like, I'm so happy to talk to you.
I'm so glad to have been invited. I was kind of nervous at first because I'm like, oh my God, I've been cursing people out on Facebook. I really don't know what to expect here. And I'm not a historian. I'm just a black woman trying to survive. I'm a black woman that's trying to raise a black man past the age of 21. Past the age of 25. I want to be a grandmother one day. I only have one.
Past the age of 40. I mean, black men of all ages are being killed by police. It doesn't matter. And you know what? Like, you're so right about what we're taught in schools. I mean, think about, like, when I was in grammar school, when I was in middle school, I was never, like, really taught about how the Native Americans were just completely nearly annihilated because of the white colonialists coming over here and deciding that because there's more of them, because they brought over guns, that they now have a right to completely take over the land and push these people out. And then when the Cherokees wouldn't go, now it gets to, let's just start outright slaughtering. You know, right. bad enough to push them off their land. But then when they wouldn't go, we just start slaughtering.
But right. Look at the arrogance that starts with, that yeah. breeds this kind of attempt to come in and say you discovered a land that's inhabited with millions of people.
That's white supremacy back in 1600.
Right, but that's not what you read about in elementary school.
No. Right, it's the narrative. It's all. Everything is about the narrative, how it's narrated. And actually, I sat in a classroom where I just received my associate's degree last year, but I'm back in classes now. And thank you, because it's a lot. It's hard work. It's hard work being and raising and being in school and helping with school and just all of this. Mm-hmm. But being in a classroom with young people, 17, 16, 17, 18, that are in school, they're in high school and they're getting college credits while they graduate. And that's mm-hmm. something that's not offered in Black communities, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, these children have no clue. And when I'm listening to the narrative in my history class that I was taking, and I'm asked to write a paper, I was just talking to you about this earlier, Jackie, is that I refuse to call my ancestors slaves as if they are like police officers or doctors or lawyers. This is a profession. Mm-hmm. No, right. They are enslaved. They are the stolen kings, queens, healers, doctors, storytellers, all of those things that you stole. They were not, their lives did not start. Mm-hmm. You stealing them. You interrupted everything that they were doing. And when I'm listening to you, I refuse to call the, and I don't mean any harm, but I refuse to call the white man a slave owner. You are the original human trafficker.
Yeah.
You are the original murderers. You are the original thieves. You are the original people who have wiped out nations of people because of your greed. Mm-hmm. And so after you rode our backs for 400 years and refused to let us into any way of getting ourselves out of this, I don't even know what to call it. It's like a game of Pac-Man where the cops are killing you, we killing each other, we can't feed our children, we hungry, we taking it from you. It's like everybody is in this game that's trying to kill you. All you're trying to do is live. You're just trying to breathe. You're just trying to raise your family, just like anybody else. But you're not supposed to want anything better.
You're right, because the people who are on top can't be on top unless they're oppressing someone.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, this whole idea of prosperity for all, there's another lie in the fabric of this, what it means to live in America, is that you can't achieve prosperity if there is institutionalized racism everywhere you go.
The system isn't broken. The system is functioning exactly the way it was intended to oppress people and to keep people down, and that's how it was orchestrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
It's disgusting.
I was also reading this really interesting article earlier, and I touched on it with a few of my Facebook jousting matches today. Because one of the things that one of the things that irritates me the most is when a white person, because I've decided that my work is going to be, I try to explain to people what white privilege is. Because I think it's easy for a lot of people to say, I don't have white privilege. I wasn't raised in a, you know, I was raised in a trailer park. I only had one parent home. I was all these things. I didn't have privilege. Right. And I'm trying my best to explain to them. Number one, if you have to declare that you're not racist, you're probably racist. In some way, shape or form, either overtly or covertly, you are racist. Because racism is fluid. Much like kind of gender is fluid, or we believe gender is fluid, racism is fluid. You may not be overtly trying to oppress someone, but there have been moments in your life where you've either thought something racist, intentionally or not, behaved in a racist way, or participated in something that intentionally oppressed other people. The hard part for us as white people is to start having conversations with each other, because it is not the Black community's responsibility to fix this. We created it. We have to fix it, because the problem's with us. So the difficult part is really taking good self-examination, really looking at ourselves in the mirror and say, how am I contributing to this problem intentionally or unintentionally? And it can be as easy as not sharing things on Facebook because you don't want to fight with family members, or it can be as easy as not getting involved in one of those conversations because you don't think you're going to change their mind. It's not about changing their mind. It's about everybody else who is reading it, maybe taking on a different perspective as well. Right. And it's uncomfortable and it's hard. And especially for somebody who I don't think I don't believe that I have ever intentionally been racist, but I'm 100% sure at some point in my life I have had thoughts that probably would be construed as that.
Right. Sure.
And acknowledging it and saying I have to do better and intentionally trying to retrain my brain to do better is what we have to force white people to start doing. No more of this. Well, I'm not a racist. I'm the least racist person you know. False.
Oh my God.
False. Yeah. That doesn't exist.
Right.
That doesn't exist.
The point that Blessing brought up, like, that's where you start, right? Like, you have to come to terms with the fact that the narrative that you've been fed your entire life is a lie and it's been edited.
Right.
And so when you stop looking at that propaganda, like it's, you know, the letter of like, this is what happened and there's no other side to the story, is when you can start to say, like Jackie said, like, I'm sure I've had thoughts before that would be considered racist because I grew up with a false narrative and we live in a country that's been founded on institutionalized racism. How would we not? But checking your privilege and being able to say, like, you don't, are you winning if it's not a level playing field?
You're not starting the same.
Because
you're not.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting too, because like I just had this conversation earlier about like privilege and white privilege and you know, like the person that I was speaking to was like, well, I do not feel like I have privilege. Like I'm not rich. I da 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 da. And I was just like, what color are you? And she was, I'm white. And I was just like, you have white privilege just because of the color of your skin. It literally has nothing to do with the money you have, where you came from. It has nothing to do with that. If you get pulled over, you are not going to be yanked out of your vehicle and put a knee on your neck because you were speeding or because you ran a stop sign. That will never fucking happen. It will in a million years, it will not fucking happen.
Right. Right.
It does not matter.
Well, yeah, look at the different protests. Because as a white person, you can go on the steps of the Capitol with an, you know, an AR.
Right, yeah, your AK.
Right.
You could yell in the face of a police officer during a pandemic with no mask on, and nobody touches you.
Nobody
does a single thing. You could
and everybody
be transmitting a disease to that man.
And everybody says it was peaceful.
Right.
It was peaceful.
And the president
was not peaceful.
Right, and the president tweeted out, and he called those, what did he refer to those people? Because I know he referred to the protesters as thugs. And these people who, they're fighting back because a life was lost. You're fighting because you don't want to stay in the house during a pandemic, and you have automatic weapons, semi-automatic weapons, and you're yelling in police officers' face, and nobody got hurt. So I don't mean to jump off there, but I want to do this little thing that I want to call It's Not Okay. Okay? Is that all right? Can I do that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
It is not okay to inbox Black people and tell them how you feel their pain and not ever share a post, not ever start an uncomfortable conversation with your counterparts who... with my counterparts, but with your, it's not okay. Stop inboxing people, stop texting people, stop whispering to Black people that you feel our pain, because you don't. And I'm not saying that you can't observe it. I'm trying to help you understand that if you feel our pain, cry when we cry, yell when we yell, get mad when we get mad. If you feel the pain, feel the pinch when it's a pinch. It's not okay.
Number two, anybody have something to say to that?
No, you're absolutely right.
Agree.
I went on a whole rant today on Facebook about that. Go ahead.
Right. I do. It's like the people share GoFundMes, but they don't donate. Like, you can't support in silence. Not how it works.
Right. Thank you. And silence indeed is consent. It is not okay to tell black people how to hurt, how to feel, how to deal with their anger, or how to die. It is not okay to tell us how to die, okay? It's not okay for you to tell us that we cannot. So, okay, that's not okay. Anybody got something to say to that? Add anything?
I don't know if this is on your list, right. But one of the things I said today is it's not okay for you to decide how Black people get to protest their injustices.
Right. And so it's not okay to tell Black people that they cannot promote, fight violence with violence when Black people have been being persecuted, have been being hung, burnt, raped, killed in jail for double and triple the time of their white counterparts. It is not okay for you to tell us what to do. And with that being said, I want to read something by Dr. Martin Luther King. And it's a shame that somebody can die, lose their life fighting for the same thing, and we can stand here 40 years later and still talk about the same things. That is not okay.
Yep.
So I quote, "Let me say, as I always said, and I always will continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard." And I'm going to repeat that. A riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear the plight of the Negro poor that has worsened over the last few years. And it has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. It has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so, in a real sense of nation summers of riots are caused by our nation's winter of delay. Let me read that again. And so, in a real sense of our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. I have been on a, this is unquote, this is me now. That was Dr. Martin Luther King speaking of during the time of Freedom Summers, speaking during the time of Selma. And America, you have gotten more creative. You have not stopped your tricks. You have not stopped telling your lies. You have never taken your knee out of our necks. So this is, you know, this is my opinion on that, is that I have been on the picket lines. I have been at the rallies. And I want you to stop calling Black people rioters and start calling, replacing that word with things like rebelling, uprising, freedom fighters. I want you to recognize it while it's happening. Don't wait until hundreds of us die and then they write a story about one of us and you keep talking about them, the same one for 40 years when a million of us have died before the days of internet. Mm-hmm. The same way before the days of videos, video cameras and camera phones, okay? And so I'm saying this to say, although I have been on the forefront and I have been within the crowds of angry Black people standing next to angry white people, the next to angry Spanish and Chinese and Indian.
Hang on. I think we lost you for a second, Blessing.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So I don't know what part you lost me at, but
you said I say this to say.
So I say that to say that I have stood on the front lines of protests, and I have stood within the ranks, arm in arm, with angry Black people, angry white people, angry Spanish people, angry Chinese and Indian, and any other person who is self-aware enough to understand when someone else next to them is being mistreated.
And I have never thrown a rock. I have never broken glass. I have never burnt down a building. But I will never tell my brothers and sisters how to. I will never tell them how much is enough and when you can explode. I lost my mother.
I think we lost you again.
We lost you.
Oh, God. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I heard I lost my mother, and then that was that.
And then I was like, wait, what?
So if I go out, put your finger up because I can see you, and then I'll know.
Right. Okay.
So I lost my mother at the age of 15. And a few weeks later, a friend of mine's lost their mom. I never came to her and said, it's okay. I know how you feel. I know how it feels to lose my mother, Habiba Abdul Shahid. I don't know how it feels for you to lose your mother, Sakina Rashid. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We do not have the right to compare. We do not have the right to say what we would do. When somebody's mentally insane and they try to tell you about what they're doing, do you try to figure out what they were thinking? No. And I'm not comparing and saying that we're mentally insane. I'm saying that you have no clue of what it feels like to want to explode in a world where it doesn't really matter what you do because you're always wrong. If you're quiet, you're wrong. If you take a knee, you're wrong. If you make a speech, you're wrong. If you silently protest, you're wrong. If you bust a brick in a cop's window, you're wrong. You're always wrong. So guess what? What people are saying right now, what these freedom fighters are saying as they uprise in rebellion, they're saying no more. We're dying anyway, and if we're going to die, I'd rather die right here showing you that I no longer give a fuck about your system. I no longer care about what you want me to, how you think I should behave. This is who I am. This is where we at. And the day of reckoning is surely coming, because there will be a day when every state will be doing the same thing, and I fear it. There will be a day. Can you hear me?
You're cutting in and out.
There will be a day. Got it.
There you go.
Hey, yo.
When every state, black, white, yellow, green, polka dot, will begin, like I said, because like you said, and a lot of people will keep saying about, you know, that the gay struggle is the same. I'm not saying that it's not similar, and I'm not saying that it's not reflective, but it's not the same, and it's not okay to keep comparing the two, because it's not the time. That's not what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. It's not going to the doctor's office and saying, I broke my ankle, and the doctor takes an x-ray of your shoulder. And you're like, no, it's my ankle. Listen, but all of your bones, all of your organs matter. But my ankle is broken. And so I want you to remember that. It's self-explanatory that all your organs matter. That's why when you come in through the cheek triage, they take your temperature and your heart rate and they do those things. They don't need to take an x-ray of all of those things as well. If everything else is working properly, what are we talking about? We're talking about the part of you that's not working properly. So it's not okay to say that all lives matter when people are pointing out the fact that Black lives matter as we're watching them die. And it's televised. It's not okay.
Yeah. That is so, seriously, it's funny because it's not funny. I don't even know why I say funny. That's not the word I'm looking
funny,
for.
Funny, weird, not funny.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like it's just, you know, like as a lesbian, like you're saying, like, yes, I understand what it means to be like to be spit on and be talked about, and but I've never feared for my life because of being a lesbian. You know what I mean?
You can Bless and I were talking about earlier today. You decide who knows if you're gay.
Right.
You can't decide who knows if you're black.
Right. Like, I can walk down the street and be straight.
Yeah.
Right.
But I can never be.
She could just be a white woman.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Right.
Until you say you're gay, you still got that privilege, but you just get.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just frowned upon. And I want you to know that my heart goes out to you to know that, to hear it. It gave me a chill. I don't want anybody to be spit on. I don't want anybody to be hated on against. And as a Black Muslim woman, I was raised that gay is wrong.
I will tell you that I live my life to understand that everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to is striving for a peaceful life. And I believe personally, because I have been taught to question everything. And with that being said, I feel as though what you do with your life is your life. I love Jackie. Jackie, from the first day that I met her, ain't nothing you can tell me about. It's nothing you can tell me about her. And I love Jackie too. And I had people in my life that I don't care. Do you care what I ate for dinner last night? Like, you're not going to shit this out. Like, no. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't care about that. What I do care about is people being hurt. And I don't care who it is. I don't want to see that anybody got murdered because they were just trying to live their life. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be one of the ones that's going to take this, that be out here yelling at you and telling you how to live your life. I don't want it for my life, but I got a little boy in this room in here, and whoever he is, which I, you know, I pray that he lives the fullest life. What would I say? What would I say? I love my child regardless. I love him regardless. That's what I'm saying.
I think too, you know, when you look back through gay history, Black people stood with the gay people during the civil rights movement. Like this is never. I can't wrap my head around some of the LGBT people that I've had to have conversations with today, and explaining to them the importance of riots and why they happen, or what people are actually trying to prove, and what these uprisings and revolts are actually trying to prove, and that it Target is not going out of business, guys. Right. Don't worry about it. Target will be fine. They're going to put in their insurance money. They're going to rebuild their building. They're going to be fine. No amount of insurance money is going to bring George Floyd back. No amount of insurance money is going to be Trayvon Martin back. Yeah. It's just not, it's not going to happen. And for all of our gay listeners who are probably mostly, we have a lot of gay listeners on the podcast, but the only reason gay rights took such a drastic turn, you're talking about like the fastest social changeover overturn in the history of this country. It essentially took 25 years, and all of a sudden people's minds, it happened within a generation. It didn't take generations to fix. It happened within a generation. And the only reason that happened was because of straight allies standing up and saying, absolutely not. You are not going to treat my brother this way. You're not going to treat my sister this way. You're not going to treat my favorite uncle this way. I'm not going to stand for it. And that has to happen now with Black people, because the only way that any of this is going to change is for white people to finally stand up and say, that's it. We're done. We're not doing this anymore. We're going to hold people accountable. We're going to knock it off with this whole blue brotherhood line thing, where you have a murderer locked up in his home being protected by 100 police officers because they're worried about his life. Where were those 100 police officers when George Floyd had a knee against his neck? Like, if white people do not stand up the same way straight people did and stick their shoulders into it and push back, it will never, ever change. It just won't. And that has to be our job. It has to be our job. And I didn't mean to bring Blessing on here for her to be like, this is what you guys need to do. Because we all know what we need to do. It's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to be uncomfortable, and that's okay, because change is uncomfortable and change hurts. You're essentially breaking a bone, but sometimes for a bone to be set correctly, it has to be rebroken. And that is the only way you're going to fix it. So we have bone breaking to do.
Let me say this though. I have lived in Gettysburg for 4 years now, and I'll tell you, there are three people who have bent over backwards, even when I didn't make a big deal out of something racist that happened, and all three of them were lesbian women, and they used their position as principal vice principal at my son's school, as a teacher at my son's school. The reason why I can teach Black History Month in my son's school is because that lesbian teacher, now principal, hand walked me around to every one of the classrooms and allowed me to talk. And so it is about you using, I don't know how to not say this the only way I know how to say it, but off of the back of the civil rights movement, the
gay movement was able to be able to zoom on past us. Every show that I watch, it's a gay person in it. Mm-hmm. Every show. And I can watch shows and not see one black person pass by. And we've been here uninvited. We didn't ask to be here. And I can watch shows on Netflix. I can watch shows all day and not see one black people. But every show now has a gay person in it. And I say that to say, use your platform. You have more of a reason. And I've learned that from the three women that I have come in contact, Jackie being one of them, to say, hey, no, not over here, because this is why I fight for them. But don't use it to try to say it's the same thing, because it's not. You're on the side of the privilege of where we're trying to reach for 100, 400 damn years. You're already there in 25 years, like Jackie said. So use it and help out and be and continue to do what you're doing, because we see you and we feel you, and you don't have to know exactly what we are feeling in order to do something, in order to change something, in order to use your voice and to use your power and your privilege. We want you to keep your white privilege, but just do something with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, totally. Right there. That right there. Do something with it. Like, do that something. Is so important. Like, I mean, how many times has someone, like, you know, like, I lost my mom. I've been dealing with it for years, you know, like, she passed away, and I have people come up to me and I'm so sorry. I can only imagine what you're going through, right? Like, right. Literally, I can only imagine what you go through every day, Blessing, as a black female in America. Like, I can only imagine. I can only imagine what your son goes through. I can only imagine it. And it is so crazy to me to think that there are people in this world that don't even want to imagine it, that don't right. even want to get on the side of imagining the fear, the anger, the sadness that happens with that. Like, there are so many people in this world that just think that, like, it doesn't mean anything at all. And it just scares me to think that person could be sitting next to me or standing next to me at a Publix or whatever.
And like, it's because you don't have
to admit any wrongdoing in that situation, right? Like, that's why people can be so much more vocal with their, you know, they're so disappointed and, you know, rioting and looting, but they won't say anything about what caused this to be the catalyst of this situation? Because then you have to admit some wrongdoing on your own, right? Like, we all are culpable in that. So if you can't even admit it, then you can't speak out about it. And so I think that's the first step. Like, everybody, it's like AA. Like, can we all admit that there's a problem?
Aaron,
yeah, right?
Aaron, one thing you said is that people don't want to admit. Some people just don't want to admit, and some people just can't fathom that it's actually real and that it happens.
Right.
And they don't even realize that that's a privilege that you can't fathom it. You're living in your privilege because you can't fathom it. I had nothing at my work. I came in covered with my black overgarment on and my black hijab on. And I told her that there was a woman in the office that she would never make eye contact with me. And she said, that's my friend. She's not like that. You don't have a right to tell me how somebody is, because they're nice to you. You're white. I'm black and I'm Muslim. And I might make her, she might have lost a family member in 9/11 and believe that I'm the only Muslim she ever seen, so she hates me. Or it could be because she just don't like my skin. It could be a number of things. But, or maybe our energies just don't mix. But guess what? She don't like me, and that's what I said. Don't try to tell me, just because it's your friend, just because she's sitting next to you,
right,
and you haven't even noticed. I'm sitting in front of you, y'all sitting next to each other, and she's making me feel uncomfortable, and you're fine because you don't look at me like that. Don't try to make her see me out of your eyes, and you see, and vice versa. You have no idea how she's looking at me, because I'm on the opposite eyes direction of those eyes, and only I can say how she's making me feel.
Right.
Okay, you to tell other people how other people make them feel.
Right. God, yes.
In public service announcement, if one more person on Facebook tells me you're letting your emotions get the best of you, you can fuck all the way off. Like, like all of the way. Yes, right. My emotions, why haven't yours? Why aren't you irate? Right. You're going to sit here until... I mean, you guys know, of all of us, I tend to be the rational one. So if my emotions have got the best of me, something's gone real wonky. Like, real, real wonky. And I want to... And, well, I told the one guy today, and I stopped getting into it with him because he was just one of those guys that kept repeating the same thing over and over and over and over again. And all I kept saying was, why haven't your emotions gotten the best of you? Why? Right. You need to examine yourself and find out why. Why doesn't this bother you more? Why aren't you pissed? Why aren't you talking about it? Why? Why? Well, I'm in law enforcement. Then you should be more mad because you know what? They're making you look terrible. Why? You want to sit here and tell me that not all cops are like that? And I come from a family of law enforcement. I know not all cops are like that, but you know what? Then stand up and point out the ones that are. Point them out and get rid of them. You want the community to trust you? You want to make an impact? You want to make a difference? Get rid of the bad ones. Get rid of them.
Right. You want to understand white privilege? This guy shot and killed somebody before.
Right.
Right.
This police had murdered someone before and still was in a position of authority with a gun.
Several times.
Use your white privilege and fucking get rid of those motherfuckers.
Right.
Say to them, this is the time. Like, I'm able to stand up. I'm white and I don't like this. I don't want this to happen anymore. No more. Like, use, like Blessing has said, like, use your privilege for good.
Right.
Like, use your superpowers for good instead of evil.
It is your responsibility to cut the systemic cord, the systemic racism cord of racism. Right. Mm-hmm. It is your job to take it in your hands. And when I say, because I said, I want you to keep your privilege, it's not that I'm saying I want you to keep your privilege and keep mistreating people. Like you said, I want to make sure that I make that clear. I don't want you to be a minority and feel bad about the fact that you have privilege. Be a minority. And which nobody likes to be called a minority, by the way, but you know what I mean? Be a minority and use your privilege to lift other people up. You could do it. It's not that hard. Just keep doing what you're doing. Connect with other people and call people out on their shit. Don't wait until I'm sitting there and whisper in my ear, they not right. No.
Yeah.
It ain't right in the light, it's in the light, and it's not right in the dark.
That's right.
Right. We need to stop editing that narrative. Because guess what? Not all cops are good. Not all anybody is good.
No.
They're just not. But what they need to do is they need to say, like, hey, we fucked up. There's this deep institutional racism. And when you mix that with giving somebody authority, that's a bad combination. So what do they need to be doing inside these police departments to fix that?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I finally had to get off Facebook by late afternoon because I was seeing posts where people who don't ever comment about the problem of racism jumped right in and commented about how terrible this looting and burning the city down was.
That's exactly what I was about to say,
Gene. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I said, you know, and I commented and I said, well, you also had a problem with when Kaepernick and the other players took a knee. They were silent and peaceful. And then by the end of the afternoon, I went off on this poor guy that I went to school with. He's conservative, but he's not an asshole conservative. But I just I responded to one of his comments with this long ass thing about, you know what? I remember watching Rodney King get the shit kicked out of him by about like five cops back in 92.
Right.
I thought that was going to be the watershed moment. I thought that when Los Angeles started burning after that, I thought that was going to be the time when America finally got its shit together and finally acknowledged this problem that we have instead of pretending that it ended when the fucking Jim Crow laws ended.
Right.
No, it did not. Just like when slavery was abolished, the Jim Crow laws took its place. When the Jim Crow laws were abolished,
except in the South,
social racism, you know, subtle systematic racism took over. And yeah, it's not legal anymore to ban black children from attending schools. But goddamn, if we don't if we don't fucking enable it in every way, shape,
well,
or form.
Well, no,
in
and
this
you
country.
Find loopholes, you gerrymander, and right. you like,
we go in the classroom and pull black kids out and put you in jail because you had a tantrum. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So systematically, we have ways that we have become creative and tried mm-hmm. to make this. And when people say that slavery was abolished, it never was. Now we just have people that we lock them up for little crimes like crossing the street. When I go to do my research for Black History Month, no, after slavery was abolished, slaves had nowhere to, the enslaved now had nowhere to go. So mm-hmm. they want to get a ticket and go to jail and work in the same cotton field because you were looting. I mean, not looting, physical.
Loitering.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, are you walking on this side of the street? Like, you can't walk over here. Now you go to jail. And now you're still working.
Right.
And on the cotton field, either for free or for pennies on the dime. So never really went anywhere. And I want to say two things. Gene, you said something about Rodney King, right?
Yes.
Now, when I was a kid, like I said, I was always taught to question everything. And I can remember it was a flashback as soon as you saw it, seen it. I could see the video. I was in the sixth grade. It was playing on TV. Mm-hmm. And this was a moment of realization to me that my parents were school teaches you to trust the police officers. And my parents told me to never trust the police officer. And don't you ever call them. If you have a problem, your cop will handle it. Don't you ever call the police. You know what I'm saying? And that's not mm-hmm. something that even is probably familiar to you to think to never call the police. That's probably something that is not familiar to you,
right.
to danger when you see a police. But this now made it real. The guy in the middle of the night who had a black eye in the next morning, the father down the street who was missing 3 weeks for 3 weeks, that the police had dumped him on the side of the park somewhere. Now it was true to me. Everything was making sense. That was the first thing that I wanted to say. And I forgot the second thing, so I'm going to give it all back to you.
You're not even drinking.
I'm not even drinking. I don't even drink.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that. Go ahead. Somebody had something? Oh, Jackie, I thought you were about to say something, but it was that. I was going to say about that. And,
let me tell you right now. I've been on this podcast for what, like a year?
Feels like mm-hmm. 10.
Well, Jesus, I don't know if I should take that as a compliment or like an insult. Either way, I have cried like 6 times tonight because, Blessing, I got to tell you, you are, I mean, I have been moved by people before, but you have moved me in a way that has been really something tonight. And I'm so thankful that you're on here tonight. When Jackie said, hey, I have this friend that I want to come on, and you might not be able to curse, I was like, I don't know. I don't know.
That was my favorite part tonight. I was like, oh.
I was like, I don't know, maybe. And then Gene was like, well, cursing and anger is my, and I was like, but drinking, add drinking in there. It's like the perfect truffle. Right. And I just don't know if I'm going to be able to say no to that. But like listening to you and like hearing you be so passionate about something that obviously needs to be cared about and you care about it deeply is just moved me to this area of like, I want to be a voice for good in this world, and it means sticking up for anybody that is not white, and right. I love that idea, and I just have to say thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me, ladies. I really appreciated my time, and you know it's been very rough, so I needed the laughs tonight. You know, it's a very difficult thing to deal with all of this with your 7-year-old. You mean with 7? He's 8 now. 8-year-old in the next room, and my husband traveling across country, and just the thought of him being pulled over, the thought of him, just deciding to make his life miserable, Amy Cooper. Right. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right.
It is to call the cops on black people who have not really hurt you.
Right.
Because why? We die. It's a threat on a black person's life to call the police on them. Now, if you are in danger and a black person is endangering your life and you truly feel threatened, then you must call the police. At that time, then, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yep.
At that time, if you feel your life is in danger and there's nothing else that you could do, fine. If somebody's harming you. But for someone who's just told you something that you that was a wound, reminded you of a wound, and wanted to, you know, come on.
Yeah. Or someone doesn't have his dog leashed at a dog park.
Right?
Right.
It could have been the same outcome. It could have been the same.
I wish, you know what? I would like every single person in America, especially every single white person, to watch the video that the mock PSA Niecy Nash did, and it's called 1-800-WHITE-FEAR. And it's a public service announcement, and it is so hilarious, and it is so biting and shocking and real. I think that, you know, a lot of times through humor, sometimes important messages really get through. But I, on the Weekly Wind Down, we have to post a link to that Niecy Nash video, because not only is it hilariously funny, but man, it really drives home the point of what happens when the Karens of the world and the other, you know, clueless people of privilege decide to call the cops on a black person. They don't understand that it's not the same experience for a black person.
She understood that. She understood exactly what she was doing.
Oh, absolutely. I'm saying that the white people, the Karens, the Kevins, the ignorant people who will call the cops on a black person because they are doing something that they don't like. They don't understand that speaking to a police officer is not the same experience for a black person as it is for a white person.
And I am saying that those people understand, and that's why they're calling the police. That you would not call the police on another white woman because you had a dispute with her. They totally understand. And if you don't understand and you're hearing this, let it be understood. But I believe, as a black woman, when someone says they're calling the cops on me and they're white, they know exactly
what they're doing. Yep. For sure.
I'm going to give our listeners homework this week for the first time ever. I want everyone to really think about the first time you realized you had white privilege. Really think about it. And I want you to send it in to us. And we are going to read some of them on, maybe not next podcast, maybe we'll give it 2 weeks, because I think we're going to need to bring this up again once the media fanfare dies down and people start forgetting George Floyd's name. Just like all the others, I think we're going to re-examine this, because, and if it was tonight, that's okay. If this was the first time you realized it, because I'll tell you, I was 17 years old the first time I realized it, and maybe that was way too late. Maybe it should have been much earlier. But I had a very good friend growing up named Calvin, who, he happened to be black. I grew up, as you guys know, in a pretty rich area. I didn't hurt for a whole lot of things in my life, and neither did Calvin. Okay, his parents were pretty well off. And Calvin came over to my house, and I asked him why he was late, and he said he had been pulled over. And I laughed, and I was like, for what? This kid drove the speed limit all of the time. I still didn't realize it at that time why. I had no idea. And I laughed at him, and I said, for what? And he said, because I'm black. And that was the very first time, because I was like, no, shut up. What'd you do, seriously? And he was like, because I'm black. And that was the very first time in my life that I had to think about what it actually meant to be black, regardless of how well off Calvin's parents were, regardless of the fact that he wore more expensive shoes than I do, regardless of all of that. None of that erased the color of his skin when he was sitting in a car. And that was my first moment. And I want everybody who listens to us to really think about it and let us know what your first moment is realizing it, and what have you done with it since? Or what are you going to do with it now? Because we need a plan. We need to come up with something. And we have enough listeners on here to make a difference. So I'm giving you guys homework. You got 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And I'm going to pick 5, and I'm going to send you all books. Okay? The 5 that I pick, Well, either Jean, Aaron, or myself will send you a book of ours. Whatever you want.
Or maybe all of us will.
Book, I send it. I just don't have a book.
Sorry. We're gonna make you a book, Stacey. It's gonna
okay.
be.
I don't think okay. I could write one in 2 weeks.
Ladies.
The Life of Piper.
Ladies, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
While I'm listening to Jackie say that, and I'm getting a little choked up, it's because I just imagine the first time that a black person, Calvin, realized that he was black and things were different from him, for him. And I'm thinking about my 8-year-old son who already is well aware of that. Mm-hmm. And I would say if I had to guess for him, it was around the age of 4.
Wow.
And so that is a lot to take in. And I'm wondering if I asked some of my friends to explain to me their experiences when they first realized that we were on the opposite end of black privilege, what that felt like and what age, it would be a lot younger. Than
17.
Sure. Yep. Isn't Absolutely. That sad too? Because like, here we have Calvin, and you would think that the age would then get higher, because yeah. we should, as a population, as a human population, as humanity, be able to be like, look, we see each other for who we are and not for the color of our skin at this day and age, and we just don't. So now it's not 13, 14, whatever. What age was Calvin? I'm sorry.
17.
It's not 17. Now it's 4. Like, right. that's
yeah.
so fucked up.
Yeah.
But guess what? The reason why Calvin probably knew it 4, too, if we want our children to live past 17, they have to know it 4.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
But that's just exactly it. That's the problem, right?
And I didn't mean to bring it down, but I just needed you to understand my reality, and I feel like that was, and because I would like to hear that too, and I'd like to come mm-hmm. back and you know, and hear some of those, you know, I'll log on and I'll check it out.
Yeah.
But I think that it's important that those kind of things that might go through my mind while you're saying something, that I share them, because it's, I don't have a choice but to think those thoughts. You know, it's mm-hmm.
blessing. I just want to say one thing. I mean, I've said a lot of things, but let me just say another thing. I just want, do not ever like that right there, like where you're like, I didn't want to bring it down. You know what? We need to be brought down to this point where we can see what everyone, like that anybody that's been oppressed, that has these things, we need to see that. So thank you. Like, I have never, I am so psyched up right now. Like, I could like lift a car. Like, I am like, you have made me feel things I haven't felt in a really long time.
What you ladies are doing, this is why it's so important, because, you know, and even for when I'm telling people, no, stop, get out my inbox, stop whispering, share it. You might be the only person in your circle that has a black friend that can pull your coattail and say, hey, no, this is not a reality. This is my reality. You know, this is different for me. And so it's important that you're using your platform. And I thank you for using your platform to help people be able to borrow Jackie's black friend that doesn't know how to shut up.
You know, you're my black friend now, too. I hope you're okay with that.
And I feel comfortable. I'm like, actually, first I was sitting at the table in the dining room, and after about 5 minutes, I took my camera off and laid down in my bed and relaxing under the air, you know. And so I feel comfortable, and I really appreciate you, ladies. I really thank you, ladies, for, you know, using your platform to call people, to awaken people. And my key bar is off to you.
Thank you, Blessing. And it's so, we so appreciate you joining us and giving us your perspective, your point of view. Because like Jackie said at the beginning, you know, we all have our own things in our own lives, but nobody can understand what a Black person really feels at a time like this, except a Black person, because we're just not in the same orbit. And, you know, it's situations like this that once again crop up and remind us how much work we still have to do in this country. And having 45 as a president has been the absolute worst.
The worst thing
to try to somehow get, you know, to get to a place where we're listening to each other, where we're respecting each other. And you know, we're not. You know, we're not training police officers to assume a Black man who runs a stop sign must be running from the law, dangerous, whereas a white person who runs a stop sign, oops, I just, you know, wasn't thinking.
Right. You get a warning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I echo all of their sentiments. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us and, you know.
You are very welcome.
We like people that can't stop talking. So you have three new friends that are right there with you that also can't ever stop talking. So
yeah. I didn't even need a drink.
Yeah. Exactly. I wish I could get on board with that.
I know, right? After the last couple of days, I've been drinking.
I've been drinking. You know they're from.
Love it.
But I hope you'll join us again on a future show, Blessing.
I would love to.
So I'm gonna steal everybody's obsessed with this week and just say it's George Floyd. It has to be George Floyd.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
R.I.P. George Floyd. You are remembered.
And white America, do better. You have to do better.
We can and we need to.
Because when Blessing said her son knew at 4, Lincoln will. I can't imagine Lincoln having to grapple with that something of that magnitude and that gravity in 2 years, and it breaks my heart. And 4-year-old little boys and 4-year-old little girls should not have to hold that kind of weight on themselves. They just can't. Do better. Mm-hmm. Just do better.
Yep.
Jackie, what the fuck?
I know. I almost never cry. So anyway.
Yeah.
Wait, I have to say this before we go. I have to say George Floyd, because I have not said his name this entire time, and I must say his name. George Floyd.
George Floyd. Don't stop saying his name, right? Like,
right.
He is.
Let's hope he's the last name we ever have to say.
Right.
Well, good luck with that. I'm sure since George Floyd, there have been more already. Yeah, and they just don't make the news.
Yeah. Right. Somebody wasn't there with a camera. That's why.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's really sad, but you're right.
Yeah.
It's a reality.
Yep.
Well, that's it for us this week, you guys. Again, I'll give you 2 weeks to send in Realizing White Privilege, what you're going to do with that privilege, and then we'll pass out some books for it. Cool? Until then, I am Jackie D, the Literary Lesbian.
I'm Stacey, the Political Princess.
I'm Jean, the Feisty Feminist.
I'm Erin, the Geeky Gal Pal.
And I'm Blessing the Queen.
Thanks for coming on, Blessing. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Yeah. Hail the Queen.
Yes, thank you.